This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings.
A very warm welcome to This Is Money and Share Radio podcast in partnership with NS&I. I'm Georgie Frost here with you on DAB across the country, online and through the Share Radio mobile app every weekday from 9 until midday, sharing ideas about money. I'm joined in the studio by personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss and consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce to talk through some of the stories on their website they've been investigating over the last 7 days and on the agenda today. Yes, happy new tax year, everybody. How will your finances fare as a result of the raft of changes coming in? We've a comprehensive rundown from savings, investments, tax and pensions.
That's the biggest real terms increase to the basic state pension in 15 years. Yeah.
The run-up to the new state pension has been mired in controversy. False promises, misleading statements, a lack of information. Has it all undermined what could actually be the clearer, simpler solution the Chancellor intended? Just who are the winners and the losers? Also today, ask in branch for details. The providers so ashamed of their ISA rates, they're embarrassed to advertise them. Do the banks want our money? Should we stick or should we twist?
It's not worth ruling out cash ISAs quite yet, though. They definitely do still have their place as it potentially protects your money for the longer term.
Well, there is one bank that wants our money, but only if you have an iPhone or an iPad. We take a look at the new digital challenges on the block.
As the year progresses, we're going to introduce mortgages for consumers, our current account, our instant access savings, overdrafts.
It couldn't happen to a newsreader, could it? We focus on scams with one very close to the Share Radio home. Mind the generation gap, we'll be looking at the troubles young people face getting on the property ladder. Buy-to-let, by the way, comes under fire again. And it all comes as rampant house price rises are pushing more homes past the death duty threshold. We ask if you're a digital snoop, but with the arrival of the new tax year, I want to know today, what are your New Year financial resolutions?
Don't use the same tax guy because he was rubbish.
Spend less and earn more.
I am going to be channeling all my money into a nice little place called Panama.
Very, very sensible suggestion there. So I'm going to come to you. A very good morning, Rachel. A very good morning, Lee. Rachel, for you, your New Year financial resolutions, please.
My cash ISA has gone down to 0.1% a year. So my resolution is to invest. I could shop around for a better cash ISA, but I'm going to get, Lee will tell us, but not more than about 1% or 2% anyway. So really the only thing to do is start thinking about alternatives.
Lee, you will a little bit later, but Lee, for you, your new
happy,
year.
Happy new financial year.
Thank you, Georgie. Lee.
Isn't it a lovely day for it?
Isn't it?
I'm the same as Rachel, actually. I'm fed up with savings rates, and I think to myself, I should get into investing. And yeah, there's so many platforms out there now that make it simpler. I'm going to really give it a go and see how I get on in the next 12 months. You shouldn't be afraid of it. You should grasp it and go for it.
All right, excellent. That's much better than me. Mine was just to remember my passwords for my online bank account so I could do some online banking.
I hope they're strong enough.
So you want to learn to make the most of your money? Of course you do. But you want to learn while also listening to satirical songs and sketches? Of course you do. And that's why we invented Managing My Money. Let me move your rates up
and down. Huge debt.
Managing My Money is an official Open University course. You can take the tests and earn yourself an Open University certificate to show how financially savvy you've become. So join Annie Weston and me, Glenn Goodman, on Share Radio 6 days a week. And if you miss an episode, you can go to shareradio.co.uk to find out when it's repeated or just download a podcast instead. It's never been easier to fill that hole in your no-zone layer.
It never has indeed. Do go online, shareradio.co.uk, for more information. And yes, Lee, my passwords are so strong, I can't remember them. I am Georgie Frost. You're listening to Share Radio. The team from This Is Money, the award-winning finance website, back in the studio with me for our weekly catch-up, running through some of the stories they've been looking at over the last 7 days. I'm joined today by personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss and consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce. It's all in partnership with NS&I. And coming up, don't the banks want our money? But first, a very happy new year, one and all. Tax year, I mean.
Do you have a New Year's tax resolution?
Don't use the same tax guy because he was rubbish.
Spend less and earn more.
I am going to be channeling all my money into a nice little place called Panama.
Get my tax in before the end of May to my accountant. Normally I get it in the second week of January, which is rubbish. So I'm going to help my accountant this year, not make him cry like I did last year.
Get my ISA done really quickly. So what's your new tax year's resolution?
There's a new tax year.
Yeah, there is actually. So those are your New Year financial resolutions. Okay, so it might not be as fun or perhaps involve as much bubbly as perhaps the 1st of January. What was the sum it might? But it's definitely worth taking note of. A raft of changes that have or are coming in this year could have a big impact on your personal finances. But thankfully, the team are on hand to run through some of the big ones and on the agenda with income, property, capital gains, tax, savings and investing. We haven't forgotten as well the new state pension either. We'll be discussing that in more detail in the second half of the show. But firstly, I'm going to come to you and we're going to look at, in more detail at savings. Now, a new personal savings allowance has been launched. What's this?
This is a big one. This is a huge change. It was announced last year. So it's just now, if you've got just a standard savings account, so we're not talking something that's in an ISA wrapper, you won't get taxed on your interest for the first £1,000 if you're a basic rate taxpayer. So that's a large chunk of the British public. Mm-hmm. And if you are a higher taxpayer, first £500 is interest free. So essentially, if you've got a taxable income between £17,000 and £43,000, you can now get your first £1,000 interest tax-free. Now, the trouble is with this, savings rates are pretty low, so it's actually quite hard to get this kind of interest. But it doesn't just count on savings accounts, it also counts on current accounts. So you know Santander, obviously very popular current account, for example, that offers 3% interest. That's now going to be tax-free if you don't get more than £1,000 of interest on it, which you can't because you can only have £20,000 maximum on that. So this is an absolutely massive change. And I know we've previously said that could spell a bit of the death of the cash ISA. Really, though, if you've built up a big ISA pot over the years, you're probably going to have interest, even though savings rates have crashed quite dramatically, you're probably still going to earn more interest than that taxable limit. So cash ISAs aren't quite dead. And this year, there's another limit, another new pot that's refreshed from this week. It's exactly the same as last year, which is quite unusual. So £15,240. Next year, from April 2017, is when it goes up to £20,000, which is what Chancellor announced in the budget last month, and also the lifetime ISA, which we've obviously covered previously. So that's the big savings changes.
Just want to know, in terms of the personal savings allowance, does that impact your tax-free ISA?
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. So you can still have your cash ISA and you can still have your other savings elsewhere. No, that's absolutely fine.
We will be talking in more detail about ISAs in a short while. Mm-hmm. New innovative finance ISA coming as well. The peer-to-peer. Here's Share Radio senior analyst Ed Bowsher before I get your views, Lee.
This is a great idea, these peer-to-peer ISAs, officially called the innovative finance ISA. So you can go on the well-known sites, Zopo, RateSetter, Funding Circle, lend some money and you shouldn't have to pay any tax on the interest. But we're in this ridiculous situation where the vast majority of the peer-to-peer platforms aren't eligible for this ISA today. And that includes all the big names that we know well, Zopo, RateSetter and the others. There's a couple of sites that have got approval for today. One is called CrowdStacker. It's pretty obscure. The reason why a couple of sites have got approval is basically a couple of years ago when this whole thing was really picking up, the FCA was doling out what they called interim approvals for these sites. The rules for the ISA saying they can only do it if they got the full approval, and the FCA have got bogged down in all the paperwork and they haven't been able to give full approval to most most of the sites full regulatory approval. They're on an interim permission where they're allowed to carry on doing business until a full permission is done. But they, so the likes of Zopa and so forth, they're stuck on their interim permission and they can't, and they're not ISA eligible at least for a few more weeks. I'm told that FCA has just completely been blown over. They've got too much work. It's all happened too quickly.
So that was Share Radio's senior analyst, Ed Bausch. He seems a bit of a fan of them in theory, but in logistics, does the Chancellor, I'm wondering, have this unfortunate tendency to bring in changes too quickly? We're talking here about the peer-to-peer ISA, but also pension freedoms and everything.
Yeah, you could argue that. And sometimes these changes, you do start wondering, you know, why he's made them this quickly. I mean, I think about the stamp duty, which we're going to talk about shortly for buy-to-let. I mean, that's come in so fast. I mean, that's 4 month window for people to prepare for that. And as we know, buying a property isn't exactly a fast process. So sometimes I think he does have the tendency to do these quite quickly. This innovative ISA, though, this is one that's been rumbling for quite a number of years, and the industry have been really pushing to have this ISA because ISAs have been so popular. They wanted a slice of the market. But of course, what's happening now is with this personal savings allowance, you know, a lot of people are now shying a little bit away from ISAs. So it's come at a bit of a bad time. But isn't that the story, the financial story there, bogged down in paperwork? I mean, it's absolutely crazy. But I have been told in the past that being a provider running an ISA, it's very complicated and there is a lot of paperwork. And that's why a lot of the challenger banks that came out last year, savings rates, fixed rates really went up. They were battling for like 1 year, 2 year fixes because they're very straightforward accounts to manage. None of them really offered an ISA because they were telling me it's too complicated. There's so much paperwork with the tax man. So, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? Bogged down in paperwork. That is just
so what's
classic.
Your gut instinct with this one?
I think it'll be popular. Yeah. I do. I think these the rates aren't as good as what they once were. So Zopa and Funding Circle, you know, but these are savings rates in general. Then you're still going to beat them using these. And they've been tried and tested now. They've been around for a few years. You know, a lot more people are giving them a go. And that's probably why the rates have dropped a little bit, because there's that initial sort of fear factor, isn't there? People will go, ooh, no, I'm not sure about these. It's a new industry. Now it's been around for a number of years. You know, Fund Circle, which lends out to small businesses, I mean, it's lending vast amount of money to small businesses. It's actually putting banks to shame a little bit, in my opinion. In the next couple of weeks, when they start launching these ISAs, it remains to be seen if they'll be popular or not. But I think more people are starting to embrace this idea of sort of peer-to-peer lending now, much more so than a few years ago.
Ever so briefly, can I just bring you, Rachel, in? Is that something you concur with?
Yeah, we've seen sort of two things happen at the same time. One, we've had a huge deficit of lending from the banks to small businesses. And at the same time, we've seen a kind of increase in this peer-to-peer decentralized system of doing things. The sort of, we talk about the sharing economy, a lot of things like that. This is just the beginning, really, I think. Mm. There are teething problems, of course, and it's a shame that everyone's bogged down in paperwork at the moment. But at the same time, if you see just how much mis-selling there is in so many different areas of financial services over the years, you sort of want to make sure that they're getting it right as well before it's launched, particularly something. There's something about the ISA, I don't know why, but people like them and people understand them more so than sort of any other financial product. And it seems that the Chancellor in particular has recognised that. And so
he's a big fan, isn't he?
Yeah, he just wants to label anything as something or other ISA because he knows that people will know what that means. And so then when you're doing that with this innovative, I mean, this is sort of, even the term sounds a bit scary to me, innovative finance ISA, something that is sort of cosy, mainstream, understandable, with this sort of uncertainty as well, often comes with more risk than other sorts of ISA investing that people might traditionally be used to. So we have to get it right.
Well, imagine, like so many things, let's see how this plays out. From saving to investing, though, Lee, just briefly, what are the changes here? A new dividend tax allowance, dividend tax credit rules replaced with a tax-free allowance. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, this has been another quite big change. All individuals get the first £5,000 of income from their dividends each year now tax-free. Previously, it was a 10% rate. But basic rate taxpayers previously didn't pay any sort of tax on this. Now, if you're a basic rate taxpayer, it's going to be 7.5% if you make more than £5,000 in dividends. How many basic rate taxpayers make that kind of money from dividends remains to be seen. I haven't seen figures on that. And then higher rate taxpayers, 32.5%, and then additional rate taxpayers, 38.1%. That's who it's going to hit harder because they're more likely to be making more money from dividends. So that's the big investing change.
Rachel?
wrap it all up in ISAs, that's the thing to do, and just be a bit more careful about sort of when you take money out. I suppose the group of people who are lower rate taxpayers but do potentially have more investings are pensioners, so they in particular may be affected by the changes. Also, people who are self-employed. I know that lots of people do this thing where they set up as a company and then pay themselves dividends from their company, and that sort of ends up being more tax efficient than going down sort of a self-assessment income tax route, but they could easily be caught up in these changes.
Well, lots of other tax changes as well, Rachel. Income tax, property tax, capital gains tax. Let's briefly go through them. Income taxed first, the tax-free personal allowance going up.
From 10,600 to 11,000. It's a little bit extra cash for everyone, unless you're a higher rate taxpayer, the highest rate, in which case it gets tapered. But that's another, 400 quid tax-free, so 80 quid a year, so all right. Mm-hmm. Plus, if you are a higher rate taxpayer, that threshold has changed as well. So that's going from £42,385 to £43,000. So another little boost there. And it's all sort of heading in the right direction if you don't like paying tax.
Well, it's going up next year as well, isn't it?
It's going up next year. And by 2020, that rate will have gone up to 50 grand, which certainly at this rate will be beating inflation significantly. So it's a nice little boost for taxpayers.
And haven't we learnt this week just how much people don't like paying tax? Marriage allowance is well up a wee bit. 1,060 it was to 1,100. What's this about?
So this is if you are married and one of you doesn't use up their full 11 grand personal allowance, you can switch it over to them. And that can save you not very much money. What is it? It's like 100 something quid, I think. Mm. But it all helps.
All helps. Absolutely. Property tax. Lee mentioned it there. Stamp duty for landlords and those buying second homes, and wear and tear allowance as well going.
That's going to be the whopper, really. That's going to really annoy people. So it used to be that you could claim 10% tax back on your rental income if you're a landlord. And you call it wear and tear, and it's to sort of cover all sorts of bits and bobs that you might incur owning a second property. But you didn't have to show receipts for it. Now you have to show receipts.
That seems fair enough.
I think so. I mean, you do have to for every other kind
expenses
of...
expenses or anything
expense.
Like that.
Yeah. And it was the case that some landlords would just sort of claim that the 10% and not do anything to improve the property for their tenants. But it's just more paperwork and it's going to make people very angry. So that's if you're an existing landlord. If you're thinking about becoming one, there's this 3% extra stamp duty on any property that you, any second home that you choose to buy from now on. Mm. So that again is another little deterrent from the Chancellor.
Was it? I think landlords probably feel a bit hard done by at the moment with lots of changes. I want to ask you about capital gains tax. Now, this will be cut for some. Firstly, I'm going to ask, what is capital gains tax? Prime Minister's been talking about it recently, hasn't he?
Now he is. This is when you sell stuff. Anything that you sell, you're allowed to make profits on a certain amount of it. I think it's 11,000 is the limit, and then after that you have to start paying tax on it. But the level at which you have to pay tax has been cut significantly for both tax spans. So that's great for everyone except those, again, poor old buy-to-letters who want to make a profit from selling property because you will still have to pay the higher rate. But anything else you choose to flog,
well, what counts as stuff to flog? What counts as an asset?
That's a good question. I suppose financial assets most likely, but then even like big stuff like paintings, you know, can be liable for capital gains as well.
I'll think about that before I sell my Picasso. Lee, ever so briefly, insurance tax premium rise, a smidge. We thought it might go up a little bit more than that, but what's going on there?
Yeah, there was a lot of noise before the budget that this was going to go up even higher, because basically last year he raised this tax. It's essentially the tax on insurers, which then gets passed on to you and I who have motor insurance, home insurance. So this went up from 6.5% to 9.5% in November. Sorry, 6% to 9.5% in November. And they were talking about it might go up another 3%, which would add, you know, another 10, 20 quid onto bills. It all adds up, you know, these sort of taxes, but it just went up to 10%, and it will mean, you know, for the average driver, a couple of quid extra on your policy, which is annoying, and you wonder, is he going to keep attacking this and freezing fuel duty as a result? It's almost like, you know, it gets the headlines, fuel duty's frozen, well, we'll slip it in insurance.
It's proper sly, this one, because it's utterly under the radar. And it'll add a bit of money, but no one quite knows what their insurance premiums are anyway. And that's sort of half the problem with why people never switch. They don't know what they're paying in the first place. Things like, well, he can't raise income tax, he can't raise VAT, and he can't raise national insurance. He's promised not to. And anything else, like, as you say, fuel duty, we would notice it because people benchmark in their heads the price of the pumps. But this IPT, which no one had heard about until about a year ago. And I think he, you know, chancellors before Osborne hadn't even thought about it, but they must have been rummaging around for places where they could, you know, scramble around for a few extra quid here and there and thought, oh, what's this? We'll have a few extra quid off this one. So that's why it's going up. And for the same reason, it's likely, I think you're right, Lee, to be one that gets attacked again in the future.
Well, there were plenty of other changes as well that came in. Happy new tax year, everybody. Childcare benefits, student loans, to name some. For a full rundown, go to the This Is Money website.
This Is Money, brought to you in partnership with NSandI.com, helping you keep on top of your savings whenever, wherever.
Now, as promised, let's focus on ISAs in more detail.
An ISA stands for Individual Savings Account. They help you save tax, so you can get a better return on your savings.
Well, if you have one, should you stick or twist, and where can you get the best deals? On This Is Money, you've highlighted how much you can boost your interest, hundreds of pounds, in fact, by moving into a better paying account. But with the personal savings allowance coming in, have cash ISAs, as Lee asked a little bit earlier, had their day? Here's personal finance expert Hannah Maundrell.
Savings is having a massive shake-up. So great news, your savings interest will be paid without having tax deducted, even if you don't save in a cash ISA. And that's because basic rates taxpayers can earn up to £1,000 in savings interest without getting tax deducted. And higher rate taxpayers can earn up to £500 in savings interest without paying tax on that, which is fantastic because we've seen savings rates languishing at a terrible low for so long now. This at least will help people earn a little bit more from their savings without going into a cash ISA. It's not worth ruling out cash ISAs quite yet, though. They definitely do still have their place, as it potentially protects your money for the longer term. And as this year, this tax year, ISAs get flexible as well, which means you can put money in and take money out up to your annual ISA allowance during this tax year, as long as the account allows you to do so. That gives you more flexibility too. And as cash ISAs often pay slightly better rates than ordinary savings accounts, they're definitely worth a look. Although it's worth considering perhaps taking advantage of the higher returns available on high interest current accounts, as long as you make sure you adhere to the terms and conditions, because you can get a far better rate of interest than on ordinary savings accounts.
That was personal finance expert Hannah Maundrell. So, Lee, we've spoken about it. No changes, you mentioned, to the ISA allowance this year. But when you throw in the new personal savings allowance, are cash ISAs worth it?
It's one of those sort of, like, you've got to work out the sums on this, because as I was mentioning earlier, they've been around since 1999. Massively popular. There's billions of pounds held in them. Traditionally, we'd have a massive battle on our hands right now. Banks, building societies, clambering over each other to offer top rates, getting large chunks of cash. It's disappeared. Banks have just disappeared out of our savings tables. They just do not care about savers at the moment. They're not interested in your cash. And, you know, some of these comments I see from our readers, you know, some of them are ending 5-year fixes. They had 4.5%, 5% interest, and now they're finding, well, I can't even get 1.5%, you know, because rates have just dropped so hard. So what you've got to do, if you've built up a big pot, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands, use our calculator. We have a savings rate calculator. We can work out how much interest you're going to get, even though rates are low. If you've got a big pot, you're still going to get a fairly good whack of interest, sort of relatively risk-free. So that's what you've got to sort of work out. If you're a new saver, if you're about to start saving now, to be honest with you, is an ISA worth it? Well, it might still be, because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. You know, another government might come in, they might end this personal savings allowance. You might not be able to get that tax-free anymore. And you might look back and think, oh, over the last 5 years, I could have had that in an ISA wrapper, built it up nicely, kept that shielded from the tax man. I think they still have a place, is my personal opinion. Unfortunately, a lot of people are probably going to disagree with that in the fact that rates are so low. But as we were mentioning and touched on at the start of the programme, might be worth having a look at stocks and shares, ISA.
But you're also looking at the arguments for keeping your cash where it is or switching it around. Now, you've highlighted some of the more naughty lenders. They're shifting you over to some pretty poor deals.
Oh, it's disgusting. So the way some savers are treated, I think, it's just absolutely crazy. You know, you get bonuses quite often that drop off after 12 months, and then you find yourself, you know, they're relying on you to not move your cash and keep it lingering in a 0.1% account. That's what they want you to do. That's what you've got to make sure you don't do. If you know the rate's dropped, or you're thinking to yourself, oh, I opened this ISA, or I even opened this savings account a year ago, you've got to check your rate. It's down to you. You know, banks have got a little bit better with publishing rates on statements online. Some of them could still be doing a lot better than what they do. But again, it's mainly the big banks and also National Savings and Investments. I mean, they're cutting their direct ISA. That's popular. People love NS&I. You know, that rate's going down. Rates are just going crashing everywhere. So you've got to shop around and find the best place for your cash. Unfortunately, it's very difficult. And the argument is people will go, oh, such little interest, you know, I should just spend it on the here and now. Yeah. And that's the problem.
Well, there are lots on here. Post Office closing its 1.4%. Premier ISA 2 new savers replacing it with a new version at 0.95%. Shawbrook Bank cut its two-year deal from a top 1.65% to 1.3%. We go on for a couple of pages, but I won't. but I do want to know, Lee, how easy is it to switch your cash ISA and what are the things that you should be thinking about?
It's fairly easy. I mean, what you do is you find the rate that you want from the provider, you fill in a form, and it's all done for you.
You get them to do it. Don't take the money out.
Exactly. Don't take the money out. That is like the golden rule. Just make sure you find the account you want to do. They'll talk you through the whole process. The process has got much better than sort of when I first started out. You know, it should be a lot shorter. It should be easy to move your cash around. So don't be frightened if you think it's going to be, you're going to get bogged down in paperwork. That's a common theme, isn't it, today? But you won't. You know, you should be able to move these quite easily. The other thing I was going to mention on this, I'd written a story yesterday about savings accounts around Europe. I'm not talking about ISA now, I'm just talking about standard savings rates. And we all think we're getting a rotten deal here, but actually savings rates in Britain compared to the rest of Europe are amongst sort of the top three.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely incredible, isn't it? In Germany, the rates for, you know, instant access was about 0.3%.
What's the reason for that? Do you know?
Yeah, I think it's just
bad environment.
Desire. Yeah, it's desire. And also, I think here we still, you know, a lot of places like Germany is quite a renting culture for property. Here, we still like to get mortgages, and the mortgage lending is going really high at the moment. For that reason, they still need some savers' cash to then lend out in the form of mortgages. But, you know, there's so much cheap cash sloshing around. That's the reason why rates are crashing here.
Now, Rachel, you've got some personal experience of this. You wrote this week some of the rates on offer this year. So poor, providers are ashamed to advertise them. Asking branch competitive rates. Do you think they're really embarrassed? And what prompted you to write this article?
Well, actually, it was seeing this poster in the post office that I've stuck a picture of it in the article on thisismoney.co.uk. And it says, you know, ISA season, hurrah, all very exciting. But it doesn't even mention in the small print what the ISA rates are that are available. And I think this is true across the board. Rates are that pitiful that they're embarrassed to say what they are. And it's not surprising. The cash ISA rate, unless you have £500 already available or considerably more money, the best that you can do out of Santander is 0.1%.
That's unusual, isn't it, for Santander? Because I thought they were, in the past,
yes,
pretty good.
Lee pointed this out a few days ago, that they, just a few years ago, were offering the highest rate, which was 3.3%. And now 0.1%. And you'd struggle to find anything that pitiful. And I told Simon this the other day, he didn't believe me. He thought surely that was the sort of epoxy rate that they slip you onto, hoping that you don't realise. But no, that is the rate that they are using to entice new customers in.
What have they said? Why has the situation got so bad? Do they not want our money?
I don't think they do want it. I don't think any of the banks do. But this is something that I'm quite confused about at the moment. I asked the reason that we sort of reel out all the time at the moment is it's funding for lending, that the banks are awash with cheap cash from the Bank of England, so they don't need our money anymore. And I thought, well, how cheap must this cash be that they don't want my money unless they can pay me a minimum of 0.1% for it? The rate that the bank charges is 0.25%. But then it's easier, I suppose, to get the money from the Bank of England because you know, it doesn't come into branch and ask stupid questions and phone them up and things like that, and, you know, ask for forms to be filled out to transfer things. Also, I realise it's a more complicated system, this funding for lending, than just that. But also, I don't understand, we've been having funding for lending for years now, and rates just go lower and lower. And you think every tax year, I think, I go in and I laugh at them and say, is that really the rate that you're going to offer me? And they sort of admit that it's a bit rubbish, but, you know, I have to just suck it up and get on with it. But 0.1%. Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? I think with Santander, you know, they've always offered such good ISA rates. My gut feeling is that it's because they've got their 1-2-3 current account and the interest is very, very good, 3%. You can't get a standard savings account paying 3% now. So imagine the interest it's having to pay out on those popular current accounts. Millions
have
been opened.
They've made that less popular recently.
Well, they've jacked the cost up, the price up of it, but it's still a good deal. It's still 3%, you know, on £20,000. So you're wondering if that's where they're cutting, you know, their savings rate in ISAs in order to attract current account customers where they can cross sell better products.
Yeah. And I'm sure they'd be very keen to point out that they do have other savings products available apart from the 1-2-3 account that offer better rates. But you have to lock in for 1 year or 2 years, or you have to have an existing pot of money, preferably 40 grand.
Well, that voice you're hearing, personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss, also in the studio, Lee Boyce from This Is Money. Well, let's focus on one bank that does want our cash and our custom, and that's Atom Bank, the new digital-only kid on the block, tops the table with its first ever account, a one-year fix at 2.2%, but it's only available to those with an iPhone or an iPad. Here's Mark Mullen, CEO of Atom Bank.
We'll begin by offering personal customers some really simple, straightforward savings products, and we'll start with a lending proposition to small businesses. And then as the year progresses, we're going to introduce mortgages for consumers, we're going to introduce our current account, our instant access savings, overdrafts, debit card, and then hopefully by the time we cross the threshold of 2017, we'll also have launched our credit card.
Well, Spanish banking giant BBVA are certainly won over. They've thrown their weight behind Atom Bank with a £45 million investment. Tepo Pavola, the BBVA Chief Development Officer and General Manager, explained why he thinks it's such a good investment.
We believe in the UK market. We believe in the Atom Bank business model. And we believe this is a very strong team. BBVA believes that UK is ripe for new banking services that are very technologically oriented, like the Atom Bank model, which combines the mobile service and a vision of bringing a customer service like the best online brands into banking. And behind Atom is a team that has done this before and has built the best customer service in banking already in their previous companies.
So lots of excitement there, but is this the future or is it a flash in the pan? Lee, tell me a bit more about Atom Bank. Certainly ambitious, and they say that they wanted to get 5 million customers within 5 years.
Yeah, I just love that. There's ambitious, and then there's that. But I mean, fair play to them. There's going to be a lot of online banks, online only banks that are going to come out. They're going to look at something like First Direct, which is owned by HSBC. It always wins customer service awards. It's very popular. Now, the benefit of something like Atom Bank is that they're investing in their technology from the ground up. Mm. A lot of these banks have got legacy systems. You know, we're always seeing all sorts of like online banking crashes, etc., etc. Atom is going to come in at a relatively low overhead cost. So that in theory should mean they should be able to offer attractive current accounts. These savings rates that they've launched, a 1 year at 2% and a 2 year at 2.2%, are top of our savings tables. Okay, it's only available via an iPad and iPhone for now, but this is going to be attracting a certain clientele, people that are happy to use technology to bank. And if you're happy and you're comfortable using an iPad and iPhone to get the best savings rate, then hey, Atom Bank's here and it's for you. There's a couple more in the pipeline, which should launch again, you know, in the coming months. This one, as you say, has been heavily backed, and Neil Woodford is one of the backers who, you know, lots of people follow his advice, and he's obviously a very popular
fund manager.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he's got faith in this bank, it probably is going to be a quite good one. It's got some good people behind it. Anthony Anthony Thompson, who's the chairman. He was behind one of the people behind Metro Bank, which launched in 2010, first high street bank in Britain for more than 100 years. So they've got the credentials. As I say, some people, I think it's going to be a bit of a Marmite bank, as in a lot of people still do like to go to branch, and that's just a fact of life. You know, but a lot of people simply don't go in branches anymore and be happy to give something else a try.
Lee Boyce, coming up, Mind the Generation Gap.
Consuming Issues with Georgie Frost, making the pound in your pocket go that little bit further.
A very warm welcome. If you've just joined us, the team from This Is Money, the award-winning finance website, are back in the studio with me in partnership with NS&I. And coming up, even newsreaders get scammed. But first, the new financial year that we've just spoken about also heralded the introduction of the new state pension.
As a result of our commitment to those who've worked hard all their lives and contributed to our society, I can confirm that next year the basic state pension will rise by £3.35 to £119.30 a week. That's the biggest real terms increase to the basic state pension in 15 years.
Yeah. The run-up, though, has been mired in controversy, false promises, misleading government statements, a lack of information. Have they all combined to undermine what actually could be a clearer and simpler solution, as the Chancellor intended it to be? Also, final salary pensions about to get a lot more expensive because of this new flat rate pension replacing the state second pension. Here's Lindsay Cook from Money Fight Club.
Because the final salary pension was deemed to be more than enough to cover your old age, when the state secondary pension was brought in, SERPs, people who were in a final salary pension could opt out. So they didn't have to pay the extra bit of national insurance. They got some of the... So they're getting a slightly smaller state pension, mm-hmm. but, hey, they're getting a load of money from elsewhere. Yeah. Now, anybody who's in a final salary pension, it has been deemed, will have to pay that extra amount so that their contributions are going up, and they're going to be paying... They're going up from 10.6% to 12%, which means the maximum extra they will be paying is around £500 a year, which is a lot. But even worse, companies, employers are going to be paying extra. Their contributions are going up from 10.4% to 13.8% if they've got employees who were contracted out. And some of these employers are actually saying, oh, no, we're not going to pay that. The employees will pay that as well. Mm. So in that case, you could be stung with an extra £1,000 a year towards your pension. Now, you still have a good pension, but it means that this year and next year are going to be lean because it's a big chunk to come out of your salary straight away.
Well, that was Lindsay Cook from Money Fight Club there. Like so many changes, there are winners and there are losers. Rachel, explain what the changes are and who are the winners and who are the losers.
OK, so it's the new state pension that we're talking about. In terms of winners and losers, it will take some time for this to all filter through. There won't be immediate changes for most people. Actually, there will be for existing pensioners because you get an extra £3.35 a week added on due to this triple lock that that we've had going for several years. But for anyone who is 63 for women, 65 for men, they will be under this new system, which is supposed to be, was sold to us as a flat rate, £155. In reality, very few people, certainly retiring initially, will get that sum. Something like only a third of the first batch will get that much, and it's so convoluted, the system, to work out who gets what and how. And most people don't know. DWP has been beta testing just the last week or so, I think, a tool where you can log on and find out an estimate for what you will be retiring on. But until now, it's been quite difficult to get hold of that actual sum, and people didn't realise that they might be affected by this contracting out thing. Lots of people might not have realised that they were contracted out or realised the implications of that, which would be that in return for paying lower national insurance for several years, you would hopefully have spent that money somewhere else in another pension scheme, getting a better rate, so you'd be better off that way, but you wouldn't get such a big state pension. People didn't realise this, and we've had pension freedoms for now over a year. The fear is that people might have spent money or come up with retirement plans based on an assumption that they're getting this lovely £155 a week, and they won't. It's worth testing out this beta site. find out what you might get and go from there. But don't assume that you're going to get all of it.
Lee, is this one of those introductions that we spoke about earlier that in theory sounds great, in practice, not so good?
Oh, he's brilliant, isn't he? Why does something have to be so complicated? I mean, the standout figure here for me, right, is the biggest loser of this. At Pensions Policy Institute suggests 11 million people in their 20s and 30s are going to be worse off from this. Listen to me, if you're in your 20s and 30s, make sure you are maxing out your private pension right now, because I don't like the way this is going. And there's all sorts of noise coming out. You know, people of our generation, you know, in our 20s and 30s, sorry if you're above that age, but it's a worry. It's a worry for the future. But yeah, you're right. These changes just come in and you just think, why has it just gone through so quickly? Why are you not thinking about it a little bit more?
It's a really tricky balance here that the DWP has had to find, because you have to make it sound as simple as possible so that people understand it. But actually, pensions are really complicated and quite boring. Mm. And so by glossing over and saying it is very simple, then people feel like they've been missold. But then if you go on it and say it's very complicated, then people don't understand it and maybe put off the whole thing altogether.
And all of this confusion as well, all of these introductions, the fast pace in which pension freedoms, for example, have been introduced. We've seen a proliferation of scams, haven't we? Now, do you reckon you could fall for a pension scam? Surely not me, you're crying out the radio. But while 3/4 of us reckon we could spot a fraud, 90% of those tested by Citizens Advice actually failed. So, Rachel, how big a problem is pension fraud?
It's pretty big and it's just going to balloon, really, because what we will see with pension freedoms is this huge number of people who previously didn't have to think about these things suddenly having access to a massive pot of money, but a pot of money that has to last them for the rest of their lives. And it's just too tempting for fraudsters. They're going to try and get it out of you any way they can, and they're, you know, just now fine-tuning how to do it and find sort of what works and what doesn't work. And getting ever more kind of calculated over it. So Citizens Advice did this interesting thing. It showed 2,000 people three pension ads, and they said which one is the bogus one. And most people couldn't spot it. But it did highlight some real warning signs to look out for. The ones that offered high returns of 10% or 15%, warning bells. Good luck to you trying to find that at the moment. So anything that sort of looks too good to be true, you have to be careful for. Then in terms of who the scheme is authorised by, it should be authorised by the Financial Conduct Authority, not by experts in defined contribution pensions. Or again, this is all just, you know, they all sound the same, don't they, really? Mm. And it's all just words. But you really, when you're talking about a pot of money that big that has to last you forever, you really have to watch out. But we're just going to see a lot more of this over the next few years.
What I thought was interesting in this was perhaps one might call it an overconfidence in reckoning we could spot a fraud, and actually most of us can't spot a fraud. But one smart lady who knew exactly what to do was our very own newsreader, Fenella Fudge, who joined us now to tell us her scam story, because it's not just pension frauds we need to watch out for. Welcome to the studio, Fenella.
Thank you, Georgie. Yes, it was not pensions, although, yes, notorious. My degree's in psychology, and I know how stupid we are at spotting. We think we can spot liars, and we think we can spot frauds. We can't. Don't trust yourself. Check everything. If it looks too good to be true, it almost certainly is, which this was. It was a job offer in my specific area of being a voiceover. And I was asked to do a game show voiceover for an internal website video, which is a fairly standard thing for a jobbing voiceover. And I got an email saying, can you do this? And it was in slightly stilted English. Now, I'm a sucker for an email in stilted English. They're very entertaining. And it's quite an eccentric industry, so you do get oddballs and eccentrics. I thought, well, we'll see how far this goes. So I replied to him and got these wonderful emails with phrases like, expectations, you need to be in a good mental and emotional state of mind. Basically, this is all that is required of you. Kindly get in touch with me as soon as possible if you will take the job. More details will be provided to you and we can continue from there. Please, no time wasting, which is just a very odd way to address me. But I thought, OK, he's in a different time zone. Could be real. So I kept up a conversation with him, up to the point that I got $2,000 in traveller's cheques in an unmarked envelope sent to me here at Share Radio, and no paperwork with it. And I thought, this isn't right. So I rang up Amex. They confirmed that the serial numbers were fraudulent and I rang the police. So it's now all in the hands of the police. I'm no longer speaking to this gentleman, wherever he may be. But it was very unusual to be targeted in a specific industry. I would expect a phishing email that just punts at any old email address. But the email was titled Game Show Voiceover, so it seemed very specific. He had a bit of a tough time trying to talk to me in voiceover language, but he did pretty well. But the traveller's checks were an alarm bell because $2,000 was way more than the job was worth, wasn't what we'd agreed. And you don't send traveller's checks in an unmarked brown envelope.
What would your advice be to anyone else in this situation, Fenella?
Check. If you get something peculiar, if I tried to cash them, I would be guilty of an illegal move of some sort. I mean, that's a criminal offence to try and cash fake traveller's checks. If you're slightly suspicious, trust your instincts. Check everything. If it's too good to be true, guess what? It's too good to be true.
I'm getting that frame to put up in the studio.
Yes.
Fenella, thank you so much for your story. Lee, did Fenella do the right thing there in dealing with this scam? What should you be doing? And what are the red flags?
Most definitely. And this really highlights, actually, in the last couple of years, as you say, how targeted fraudsters are getting. They're getting sneaky and they're getting very clued up on how to defraud people. I think of an example that I wrote about last year where they knew that the EU were paying out funds to farmers on a certain day. Their information, addresses, all available via the EU website. They just probably just went through that list and just said, oh, you know, your bank account's been compromised. We know you've had this big payment come through from the EU. Loads of people fell for that scam. I had so many people contact me on the back of that. But it just shows you how they can really pick on certain little things. Niche areas like voiceovers, who would have thought it? And you just think that you'd think that was genuine if it's so industry specific. If you have any doubts, just get someone else to run their eye over it and take a look at it. And if it's too good to be true, let's get that on the wall. That is so, it's just 101. 101 of fraud. If it's too good to be true, it is going to be too good.
Fenella, thank you so much.
Pleasure. But if you'd like to pay me $2,000 for a voiceover, I'll be very happy to take it.
A plug. Fantastic.
On digital radio across the UK and online, this is Share Radio.
Wonderful Fenella Fudge there. I'm joined today by personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss and Lee Boyce from the award-winning This Is Money in partnership with NS&I. We've been looking at scams, savings and pensions, so let's turn our attention now to housing. And we spoke, didn't we, about those who are in their 20s and 30s, indeed Lee did, who will miss out on the new state pension. Things are getting tough, aren't they? And it's well known how astronomically difficult it is becoming for young people to get on the property ladder. In fact, official data suggests the dream of ever buying a house is all but over for many who are under 40. Now, I even asked my assistant producer, Frey, who's 26, if he's hoping to get his foot on the property ladder anytime soon. This was his response.
No.
Yeah, I think that's a no then. The numbers back it up. 4 in 10 people aged 26 to 30 privately renting from a landlord, compared to just 1 in 10 in 1987 and 2 in 10 in 1997. So how did this happen? One culprit seems to be, yes, big bad buy-to-let, as Lee's latest article on the subject argues. Lee, talk us through this, if you would.
This story, it's from the ONS. The graphs in it are just so visually pleasing. You've got to go and take a look at these graphs. It's just absolutely data excitement. But what they're showing, basically, it's really quite frightening how many under 30s now have a mortgage compared to previous years. It has dropped off a cliff. You know, people aren't managing to get a deposit together to get on the ladder. And that's because they're struggling to cobble together these deposits because of rising house prices. You could argue that one of the reasons for that is buy-to-let. And look at the stats here. You know, 2% of people in 1984, so 2% of households, were reported receiving income from a rented property. That has ballooned to almost 6%, and it has gone up substantially since the financial crisis. People have been going into property. You know, they might be quite cash rich. They don't know what to do with their money. Savings rates are low. It's hard to get returns. People like to have an asset. So they're buying buy-to-let properties. And you can see these graphs actually really do outline probably why the Chancellor has been, putting the foot down.
With the stamp duty changes, with the maintenance allowance.
Exactly. Mortgage tax relief next year as well.
Good?
Well, it's good for who? You know,
for the young people.
It's so difficult to know now because house prices have really climbed in the last 2 to 3 years. And even if there was a big house price correction, let's say house prices dropped 10% in the next year, I still think it's going to be very difficult for people to get these deposits together. And what experts are arguing with buy-to-let is that landlords are simply going to be passing these costs on in monthly rent. So people are going to be screwed even further because they're going to be struggling to get that little bit of extra disposable income to save towards a deposit and do it. And, of course, there's been all of these schemes that have come out, Help to Buy, Lifetime ISA next year. There's simply not enough houses being built to keep up with demand. And it's a scary place if you, at an age, you know, if you're sort of in your mid-20s, that's when you're probably feeling like you're getting a solid career, you might have been in a job for a few years, and you're really thinking to yourself, do you know what, I want to own a place, I want somewhere to call my own. And you're finding it's actually really quite difficult.
Also, the reality, I suppose, therefore, then for many young people, the only way they're going to be able to own a home is if they get perhaps one from their parents. But what you've also been looking at is with rampant house price increases, more homes being pushed past the threshold at which our assets become liable for death duties. Changes announced by the Chancellor should lift the vast majority of homeowners out of inheritance tax by 2020. What's going on here, Rachel?
It's true that the IHT allowances will go up, but in the meantime, house prices are rising faster. So there'll be properties, particularly in the southeast, and then particularly in London, that will be affected. That they may even just, you know, most flats probably will fall under the £325,000 for allowance for one person.
Mm. Well, now to this. All I want is to be left alone. Yeah, it's probably because they are, particularly your home. According to Direct Line, 40% of us admit to being digital curtain twitchers. We're looking up the prices of homes owned by our neighbours, our families and our friends. Also, love interests are being spied on, and almost 10% have checked on an ex-lover's assets. So, Lee, are we just generally nosy and the internet makes it a lot easier for us to snoop on people, or is this a house price thing?
I can't imagine a world without Rightmove and Zoopla these days. You know, it's so something really sort of satisfying about looking up, you know, your old house. I looked up my old childhood home the other day. Why? I just thought about it and I thought, I wonder what's been sold for recently and how the house price has gone. And I do it all the time, you know, with friends' houses. It's awful, but you can't help it. You can't help yourself. And it has made it so much easier, the internet. But, of course, these are just valuations from, you know, quite small data. You don't know actually how accurate they are. But I love looking at property. I can't help myself.
It's a bit like having X-ray vision. You know, you can walk down the street, click use current location on Zoopla, and you can see into people's houses. It's amazing.
God, you two are all at it, aren't you? Blimey heck. I've never tried this at all, but it's a bit of a worrying about the idea of checking on your love, potential love interest as well.
Look at that. That is absolutely, that's
Lee.
One step beyond, isn't it?
It all comes out now. Lee Boyce, Rachel Rickard-Strauss, thank you so much for joining us.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I. Looking after the nation's savings for over 150 years.